Good morning, everyone. Welcome to NSPS Radio Hour for another edition today on this lovely Thursday. Today's Monday. I'm way behind, David. I went on an issue down in Arkansas at the end of last week that came up all of a sudden. I went down to meet with their surveyors on an issue that came up in their legislature, and it seems like I've been out of touch ever since. my flight was late leaving there, coming back Friday night, and so I had to stay over in Atlanta, and I've just been playing catch-up ever since. So today still seems like Thursday to me, although it is Monday, of course. But welcome to the show, and for the audience, my guest today is David Marquardt. I think I'm pronouncing your name correctly, or I hope I am, David.
Yes, that's correct.
David and I had become acquainted a while back, a couple months ago perhaps, when I was up in Alberta attending the conference up there, and after I gave a little presentation, we had a chance to talk, and became apparent to me that David would be a really good person to be on the show to provide some perspective on a number of things that I know are of interest to our audience. One of the things I find, David, about surveyors is that we are interested in anything that has to do with what we do, no matter where it is or when it happened. That may be true in Canada as well, but it's certainly true in the United States.
I know we have a lot of common problems, and I just want to say welcome to greetings from sunny southern Alberta to all our colleagues out in the eastern states and eastern Canada. It's great weather out here, and so anyways, getting back to what you were talking about, Kurt, yeah, we invite a lot of guests up to our annual general meetings here in Alberta, and it's always interesting to hear perspectives from land surveyors, you know, south of the 49th, and even land surveyors from other different provinces in Canada, and all kinds of common problems that we seem to encounter as a surveyors. And it's just interesting to know that we always have the similar ways of working things out, but the problems are still there.
Oh, yeah, very much true. And I'm not really sure. I know one of the things that I found particularly interesting when I visited with you guys was the meetings of the presidents from all the provinces, or the surveying societies in all the provinces, and had a chance to meet with them on a couple of occasions. And I don't know if that's something that happens every year at the Alberta Conference, or if perhaps they do it in a different province every year. But that was really enlightening to have an opportunity to hear the issues of the day, and as I always find, regardless of where I go, I haven't been anywhere in the world yet where it wasn't the case. As surveyors, our issues are all pretty common.
Yeah, that's correct, Kurt. We have these meetings every year, and we invite survey representatives from all the neighboring provinces in Canada, and occasionally from Washington State, Idaho, and Oregon, some of the states close by, as such, our president of our association every year gets to go to all the other provincial association meetings as well. You know, Ontario, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, British Columbia, and even places back east. So it's quite a unique situation. We do share a lot of information, a lot of ways to go about, doing the things that we do in terms of legislation that's applicable to our particular area. Is it applicable to someplace else in Canada? And the answer is probably yes in some way, shape, or form. So it's a good sharing scenario, and it seems to work quite well up here.
Yeah, and that's interesting to know that the presidents meet at each of the meetings. I hadn't really focused on that. I thought maybe this was once a year they go to a particular province, but it sounds like they all get together at all the meetings, which is pretty interesting. We aren't quite able to do that here, although there are invitations, and generally speaking, for people in a particular region in the U.S. for the presidents to come to meetings. And of course, with our national board of directors, we have a representative from each of the 50 states, as well as the District of Columbia. So that's an opportunity for the delegates to meet, although typically those delegates are not the presidents of the societies. They're typically members who've been elected as a delegate to to NSPS, but certainly that's of interest. And as a matter of fact, I was just this past week we were talking about Western Canada in our conversation, and I'd just gotten a correspondence from a lady who is preparing some type of article or publication about the importance of surveyors in the development of the western part of the United States, and she was looking for people to participate in that discussion with her. And so I just sent an email out this morning to our group to see if we could locate some folks to maybe talk to her. And I know that's one of the things you and I discussed about your knowledge of the history of surveying system in Western Canada.
Well, it most certainly is an incredible history. We've got a book that we produced some years ago. It's called Laying Down the Lines. It's I believe it's available on Amazon, but if you ever wanted to read a fairly decent history book on the history of surveying in Western Canada, it's probably one of the better ones out there. And, you know, just kind of going back, just if I could give you a brief history of that, Kurt, over the radio here. You know, there are two groups way back in our history that had a lot to do with how the survey system started, and that being the Hudson's Bay Company, which were involved in Canada as far back as 1670. You know, they formed a company in England, and they had the charter there that, you know, claimed pretty much most of Canada in that charter as Hudson's Bay land. And, you know, for 200 years, I mean, that land extended pretty much, you know, what you see on the map there, and actually went as far down as Oregon with the exploration and surveys of David Thompson. And the other driver, you know, as far as historical perspective goes, was our national railway, the Canadian Pacific Railway, and the building of that railway, and how it came about as far as Confederation. Now, surveyors were involved in both situations. You take all the explorers, one of the major explorers for Hudson's Bay Company, Alexander Mackenzie, Anthony Henday, Samuel Hearn, David Thompson. They were all surveyors and all explorers. So, you know, they mapped out much of our Western Canada. And when it came to the building of the Canadian Pacific Railway, surveyors were always ahead of the line. And, you know, they were talking about 1870s, 1880s, and, you know, part of the reason for Confederation for British Columbia is that, you know, they were promised a rail link to the east as one of their promises that they would join the Confederation in Canada at that time. So, you know, that's kind of the history. And, you know, when they were laying the rail lines, of course, they were surveying at the same time. And the terrain that we have in Western Canada is much like your Midwest. You know, your flat states, your prairie states from, you know, Nebraska, Kansas, pretty much all the way up to, you know, foothills in Colorado and stuff like that. So it was very, very easy territory to, survey, although the climatic conditions may not have been the greatest, but, it's fairly flat land to lay out a survey system, you know, a township system roughly, you know, 6 miles square per township. And so that's kind of how our survey system originated, and a little bit of history there anyways.
Now, as far as the township sizes are concerned, the comparison between them and what we call our public lands, what are there similarities there?
I believe so. Yeah, our township system is roughly, it consists of 36 sections, you know, the township being 6 miles square, each section roughly a mile by a mile. And I do believe it's our township system is kind of a mirror image of yours. If you can think of a square block with the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 along the bottom, and then we go in a kind of a lawnmower effect going up and back and forth. So the section 36 would be at the northeast corner of the township, whereas your Section 36, I believe, is at the southeast corner of your township block. So it's kind of a mirror image. So roughly about the same.
Sure. Yeah, and that seems as though the railroads always played such a major role in the development of everything that was going on and how land began to be parceled out and all the land rushes and what have you that have occurred. And I'm assuming that was very similar for you guys. And I'm a little familiar with David Thompson. One of our folks down here, a guy named Denny DeMeyer, you may know Denny, I don't know, but he's been involved in projects. And
yes, I know Denny very well.
He's going to be on the radio show again pretty soon for another thing that he's working on. But he chronicled his trip. You know, he did the followed the boat trip, so to speak, that Thompson took coming through the Northwest, and I had him on the show a couple of times. He came on before he did it, and then he came on after he did it. So it was pretty interesting. And I think perhaps until that occurred and we started doing some publicity about it, I would venture to say there were probably some surveyors in the U.S. who never heard David Thompson's name before. But he was quite a person. From all
he was, absolutely amazing. We did a couple of retracement trips for him up here in the past. I think it was about 5-6 years ago or so. And you know, one of the trips to go back, how they would travel to go back from Alberta, go back east via waterways. Of course, it was a bit of a northern route along the North Saskatchewan River, where it empties out into Hudson's Bay, or goes south there from through Lake Winnipeg down into the Red River area. So it was quite a trip, and I know that Denny's been a very big driver of this and big supporter of David Thompson and stuff like that. So really appreciate that. It really brings a lot to light.
Yeah, it certainly does, and provides some good history for our folks here as well to learn more about how things were done and who was doing the work. And it is interesting, and we only got a half a minute before our first break here, but it's so interesting how once you delve into the work, surveyors have been so prominently involved in the development of both of our countries. And this lady who'd contacted me recently had, in her original correspondence to me, said her son's actually a surveyor in Tennessee and North Carolina. And I don't know if that spurred her interest or not, but she was really interested in letting people know, you know, just how important surveyors have been and are. So we're coming up right to our first break here, so we'll break away and be back in a couple of minutes.
Want to know if your Schonstedt locator is still under warranty? Go to Schonstedt.com and click on Warranty Finder in the lower left-hand corner. Enter your 6-digit serial number, and it will tell you everything you need to know. Out of warranty? Click on Repair Department. But here's a tip. Before sending it in, pick up a $25 discount by going to Specials and Sales under the Buy Now tab at www.schonstedt.com.
This is Georgia author Doug Dahlgren. I've got a new program starting here June 12th at 11 a.m. It's called The Prologue, and we'll be introducing you to other writers you may not have heard of yet. Join us, won't you, starting June 12th, 11 a.m. here on America's Web Radio.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Quick Stakes is your answer to staking. Lightweight, easy to ride on, easy to use, easy to find, and won't break your back carrying them like the old-fashioned wooden stakes. Have you tried a sample? If not, get a pen and paper and write down this number, 800-438-0387, or go to quickstake.com, that's quickstake.com, and order your samples. Ask your surveying supply dealer for Quick Stakes today.
And And here's something new from Schonstedt. Did you know that Schonstedt has upped the ante on trade-ins? Now you can trade in any instrument, theirs or a competitor's, in any condition, working or not, and receive more in trade than ever before. Plus, they'll pay the freight both ways. Contact your local dealer for details or go to Schonstedt.com. That's Schonstedt.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And we're back for our second segment today with David Marquardt. We have a good conversation in the beginning about some of the origins of our two countries and the layout of them, if that's the correct word, or at least the development, I guess, of the countries through the railroads and how the surveyors have been involved in that, as we surveyors know, from the very beginning. Of course, our systems are a little different. I know you and I talked when we were having our conversation originally about the Torrens system that
right.
You all use versus the one that we have. So maybe it's a good conversation to let our listeners know a little bit about the system there.
Well, it was quite a bit of a debate when our province came into being as to what sort of survey system and registration system was going to happen, and eventually they settled on the Torrens system, which was developed by Robert Torrens, who was an Australian. And essentially, the two main principles of the Torrens registration system is that firstly, it's a central registry. It's within the the confines of the government, and it has two particular principles that are outstanding. And the first of all is a mirror principle. Whenever you go to the land titles office and you want to pull a title on a particular parcel of land, everything that is shown on that title is the interest on that particular parcel. In other words, what you see is what you get. And the curtain principle, which is the second one, is that there is no underlying interest behind that particular title. In other words, you do not have to go to search anywhere else to find out any other interest that would be on that title. So that's kind of the most unique thing about that. And I know when surveyors from the States come up, they're quite amazed that we have pretty much a one stop shop. Now there's several different registry units, if you call it that. Land titles is primarily for freehold land. We have a crown registry and various native Métis registry systems, but essentially they're almost all in one spot. I mean, you can almost do that online for any system that we have here in Alberta, but land titles is the primary one where you go to get your information on any particular parcel of land. And all the survey plans are when you do for easements or for particular parcels of land or even resource interests like, pipelines or anything like that, those are all usually registered at land titles, either as a plan of survey or as an attachment to a caveat of interest that gets registered on title. So it's quite a unique system. And I know down in the States, and I was looking at, some historical stuff through your website and through a professional surveyor and reading some of the stories there, it seems that with your deeds registry, you have to check not only the county courthouse, but, local lawyers' offices and everything like that. And it just seems like there's a real substantial amount of work that needs to go into getting all the information ready before you actually even go out in the field. So that's a considerable difference, and I think we may be most beneficial in regards to the system that we have up here, because it is quite easy and quite nice to use.
So that system, I assume, was initiated from the very beginning.
That's correct.
Yeah.
It was it was federally run from Ottawa for many years, and then through legislation, the overseeing of the land title system got transferred to the provinces.
Yeah, that's people on the who listen to the radio show regularly have heard me use this phraseology before. But you were talking about the work that we as surveyors in the states go through to gather the information that we need. That led me to, I think I said this when I was speaking to the group up there, that you know our characteristics are detective, puzzle worker, mind reader, because it takes all of those skills to be able to find what you need versus the system that you all are in. And I don't know, is there something, you may not know the answer to this too, but I'm wondering if there's a system in other parts of, I know there's parts of Europe where this is true, and also probably Australia and New Zealand that has a similar system to what you guys have. Is it more prevalent in throughout Europe or something like it than, or I guess the question is, are we as U.S. pretty unique?
I think the as far as us go, I know it's very, very similar in Australia, and I believe in New Zealand as well. A lot of the British colonies, I think, United States tends to take on what was going on in Europe, particularly in France with the deeds registry and the cadastre and stuff like that. So I'm still finding out information on that as I do some of my international travels. I tend to try and stop in at surveyors' offices and wherever I go, and just to understand, to find out some information and what they what they actually do abroad. So
yeah,
it's a learning system. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, that's true, and I know. The people who participate for our organization in the FIG and the international group have an opportunity to meet and talk with surveyors from all over the world. And usually what we tend up finding, or when we tend to find out about their survey systems, is most often during dinner or over drinks or something, because the meetings that are going on are, although they're specifically targeted for surveying issues, aren't talking about, well, how do you do things and how's it different from me? But it does create a great opportunity to get to talk to people and learn more about how things are done in other parts of the world.
That's one of the great things about interacting with surveyors, and I quite enjoy that very much.
Yeah, I would agree with that wholeheartedly. It's certainly enlightening and encouraging when we do that. Well, one of the things that I know you're involved in is you serve as the chairman of the Alberta Land Surveyors Boundary Panel. Tell us about that.
Well, it's a volunteer committee, and it came about, it's been coming into being for a number of years now. We're just kind of sort of hitting our stride. It actually started back in the 1990s. We were trying to throw some thoughts out there how we can resolve boundary issues cheaper than having it go, and more efficiently than having it go through the court system. Now, I may be saying some things that are almost would put me before the Inquisition as far as lawyers go. But when you're dealing with particular property lines in our system is a monumentation system. We have steel posts that go into the ground for the most part that actually mark property corners, although we are looking at different types of coordinate systems. But for the most part, our survey system now is based on monuments on the ground. So when you have a boundary in dispute, either because of lack of monuments or because monuments were for some reason either put in the ground improperly or in some cases they were moved by someone other than the surveyor or by construction or something like that, and you have two surveyors that disagree on a boundary. The purpose of the boundary panel is to bring these grievances and these issues before a panel of professionals, people from our own association. And then we work to resolve them either, through the land surveyors that are involved or through you know, through municipal governments, et cetera. And we've had some success, not as much as we would like, but probably a lot more than we originally had figured. I think we've had about 100 cases in the past 10 or 15 years, and some of them have been fairly substantial too. We've got probably a 40% success rate. In other words, that the Lanceriers have, you know, come to some sort of agreement, and either one or both Lanceriers have volunteered to correct their plans and have corrected them. Registered those corrections and registered all the consents and stuff like that in land titles, so that the boundary is set and done with, and the case is resolved. But it's an interesting issue, because sometimes we've looked at some cases and we realize that you do the one reason or another, the value of the land is. It's fairly substantial. It's not the responsibility that, we won't want to take on because of, liability issues, and stuff like that. And we just say, well, we can't take this case on. It's strictly a case for the courts. It's way too complicated for us. But some of the simple ones, and I can tell you that a good majority of these boundary problems are easily resolved. It just takes a couple of surveyors to sit down and listen to each other's case and just kind of get their pride out of the way a little ways and say, well, maybe this guy does have a better point than I do. Maybe he used better evidence. And away we go from that. We try to encourage that. So that's the kind of the purpose of what we do as a boundary panel here at our association.
That's really laudable, I think, to be able to do that. And I think one of the important elements you mentioned was that it's a way, perhaps, to keep people out of the courts. I know there's a small group, although fairly active group here in the U.S. that I've been talking with here over the last year or so, who is really interested in doing something very similar to what you're talking about. It's perhaps more of a, they're talking about it as mediation. I'm talking. To me, it's more of a facilitator, which is what I'm perceiving is what you guys are doing. You're facilitators to get people to talk to each other and resolve issues without going to litigation over them. And where surveyors can be allowed to do that, I think surveyors can be very, very useful to do that, because we're the ones who are closest to the problem, so to speak. And I don't know about in your country, but here we find that once we get into the courts, the people who end up the lawyers and even the judges who deal with it aren't always terribly familiar with the issues themselves, other than the legal ones, not necessarily the ones that solve the problem, so to speak. So that's a great idea. Does that, and I know we got to go to break here, but and maybe you can answer this when we come back, but I'm curious if that kind of panel exists in the other provinces.
There are some things in British Columbia and I believe in Quebec that go along the lines of mediation. I'm not too totally familiar how they operate, Kurt. So,
okay, well, we got to go to break anyway, so we'll be right back.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
Quick Stakes is your answer to staking. Lightweight, easy to ride on, easy to use, easy to find, and won't break your back carrying them like the old-fashioned wooden stakes. Have you tried a sample? If not, get a pen and paper and write down this number, 800 888-438-0387 or go to quickstake.com. That's quickstake.com and order your samples. Ask your surveying supply dealer for Quickstakes today.
Want to know if your Schonstedt locator is still under warranty? Go to Schonstedt.com and click on Warranty Finder in the lower left-hand corner. Enter your six-digit serial number, and it will tell you everything you need to know. Out of warranty? Click on Repair Department. But here's a tip. Before sending it in, pick up a $25 discount by going to Specials and Sales under the Buy Now tab at www.schonstedt.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, David, I want to follow up on the discussion we were into when it came time for the break on the boundary panel, because I know our listeners are interested in this, and I want to get some clarification too in terms of the policy or what's held and what isn't held, because I think you said something about when mistakes are made in measurement or setting of corners in the wrong place in terms of the framework itself. And why I'm thinking about that is, you know, our framework of the public land system has the sections, but typically if those section corners were established incorrectly from a mathematical perspective, whatever markers they held still ended up being where the section line was, even though if it wasn't a perfect rectangle. But I think I'm understanding you to say that that's not necessarily the case where you are, that you do go by the framework, and if something got set incorrectly, then it is set correctly from a mathematical perspective. Am I understanding that correctly?
No, I don't think so, Kurt.
Okay.
Oftentimes during the original surveys, you know, they may not have been perfect. You know, they typically, you know, their quarter sections were measured out at 40 chains, which is, okay, that's roughly a half a mile, so 40 chains, each chain being 66 feet. Where they, although they tried to do that, it's not exactly mathematically correct, and we've come to understand that in our system here, that, you know, when you go to measure an original survey done that was supposedly a half mile, then, you know, you could be 3, 4, 5, 6 feet one way or another. But as long as you have the original monument or traces of the original monument, you know, then that's where your section corner, your parcel corner actually is. The half a mile thing is what they tried to do, but oftentimes, you know, you think about it, they're pulling this 66 foot chain over hill and dale, and oftentimes, you know, they were out a little bit, as good as they were. So as far as the boundary panel goes, and oftentimes most of the cases that we deal with are from more recent surveys, and where some surveyors have taken the mathematical solution to be the correct one as opposed to trying to find where the original monument actually was. And, you know, they would proportion in corners and mathematically, you know, established corners, which is totally incorrect as far as all the principles of evidence that have been written about proper, you know, reestablishment of survey corners and stuff.
Right. And you were saying, we were talking about this during the break, that I had, I think, asked the question of whether this was a voluntary thing that the society itself set up, but you were saying there's some legislation tied to this as well.
Yeah, our particular boundary panel is mandated by legislation. So, you know, we are enacted in legislation in that regard. So it's more of a public service than anything else. Like, I mean, any member of the public can come to the association with you know, with a boundary issue if they have a boundary issue with their neighbor or two neighbors and they want to, you know, find out exactly where their fence line is, even though they can't find the original monuments. Municipalities, counties can come to us with the, you know, with the same problem, and as a boundary panel, we'll attempt to resolve the issues and establish those boundaries where they were, not where they should be, and that's kind of the whole mandate of what we do here, and try to do it as efficiently as possible. Now, there are some boundaries that simply we just, for, like I say, for the reason of either the value of the land or for the complexity of the case, we have to leave it for the courts. But for the most part, a lot of the boundary issues that we have are readily resolvable.
And so, understandably, that, from my perspective, understandably, that would be a cost savings to the people who were involved, to the landowners who were involved. And that's one of the things, obviously, that surveyors are interested in, is helping people solve their problems without having to spend the expensive legal fees and that type of thing. So do they, do the, to the individuals who are involved, the landowners, do they pay a fee to the commission itself, or to the society, or to the individual surveyors involved, or how does that work?
No, they don't pay any particular fees. This is a voluntary panel, and you mentioned it. You hit the nail right on the head, Kurt, when you said that, you know, surveyors are interested in figuring out problems, and you'll never get a couple more dedicated surveyors than, you know, that want to find the original corners, whether they dig for it or scrape for it or whatever. And, you know, so it's always a topic that interests land surveyors. So all the members of this panel are voluntary. We don't get paid, so it's just time that we donate to our association. Because one of the mandates for us as a surveyor is that we are here to serve the public. And it doesn't matter. We may get, you know, a subdivision or a type of survey where we actually have to go out and determine boundaries, which we do pretty much all the time. But you have to understand that you're not only serving your client, which may be on one side of the fence, you're serving the neighbor who is actually on the other side of the fence. So you have to have some unbiased judgment there when you're doing this. So no, it's all voluntary.
Yeah, that's and the topic that comes up. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, the only thing that the parties or the whether it be the landowners that come to this boundary panel would have to pay for is if we have to do an investigation or something like that, and we would say, okay, well, in order to resolve this, it's going to cost X number of thousand, $1,000 or $2,000, $10,000, whatever the case may be. You can either share it with your neighbor, but you know, we'll help you out as much as we can in that regard, because that's our job. That's our duty to the public.
Very true. Very true. And is this, the work of the panel, is that ever used? I know that you guys have a process of what I would refer to as mentoring, and your system of getting to licensure is, I guess, in some ways similar to the one that we have. But maybe we could spend some time talking about that. What, I don't know if articling is the proper terminology, but
yes,
you know, that's the term that I hear.
Yes, no, that's right. For land surveyors that are up and coming, and this, if that's, or for students, if that's the career that they wish to choose, they have a couple of institutions here in Canada that that take you to a certain particular level. So, like after high school, if you wish to take a technology program that majors in surveying or something like that, there are several colleges that you could choose from. A lot of the technical colleges that offer any surveying courses, that takes you kind of to a certain level, if you want to call it level 3 or something like that. And but if you wanted to go on to university, there's two universities in Canada that are actually, there's three that University of Calgary and University of New Brunswick are the two major ones that offer the core survey courses and all the things that you need to get up to the next level. And once you've graduated from university, you are ready to serve articles with a particular land surveyor of your choice, depending on what type of work you want to get into. And the articling period could last anywhere from 2 to 7 years. I mean, it's really hard to teach a young student everything that you know as a land surveyor about surveying, about evidence assessment, about all that sort of good stuff in 2 to 7 years. I mean, I've been a land surveyor now for almost 25, and, you know, being on the boundary panel, I'm realizing that, you know, there's a lot more about evidence and history and stuff that I'm kind of learning every year. So it's always a continuing education process. But so the articling process takes anywhere from 2 to 7 years working under a land surveyor, doing various projects. We definitely have requirements, certain requirements that articling students have to meet. And at the end of that, their articling period, if they passed all their professional exams, done all their technical reports, then they're eligible to become a land surveyor. And the last key to that test is that you sit before a panel for two, or actually more like anywhere from 3 hours and 3 hours plus, answering questions and all that sort of wonderful good stuff. It's a bit of a tense situation for a lot of people who are not used to that, but it's a good process.
So the process for, let's say, one get, as you mentioned earlier, you go out of high school, and you said that they could go to university or, I guess, some technical schools, but they have to have a certain number of years in those schools just to get to articling, if I'm understanding that correctly. So is a university degree, four-year degree, absolutely required, or is there some other way with an extended articling?
No, they can go to a technical college, and like I say, they would get all their requirements through their courses to a certain level, like level three. University degree kind of gets you to almost up to level one. So those that decide to go to the technical college route, there is challenge exams that they can write after college, you know, to upgrade them to what would be considered a university degree as far as your surveying goes. It takes a few years to do it. That's the route I went years ago because we're a family situation. I had to work at the same time I was married, and I had children on the way, so to actually head off to university is not really a great idea.
Yeah, but I think there are a lot of us who relate to that situation. For sure.
Yeah, so I had to write challenge exams for, I guess, almost 6 years before I actually got my accreditation to be the equivalent of a university graduate. And
so
then I start articling.
That 2 to 7 years of articling, though, is after you get to that point. I mean, the amount of time in the articling process is not necessarily tied to the level of education. Am I understanding that correctly?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. It's strictly up to, you know, the propensity of the individual to absorb information and how badly they want to obtain their commission and how quickly they want to do it.
Right. So I have a better understanding of that now. It's based on your initiative to some degree. So, well, we're 10 seconds away from our last break here, so we'll go to that break, and I want to come back and talk about another really, really important thing that you're doing these days. So we'll be back shortly.
Want to know if your Schonstedt locator is still under warranty? Go to Schonstedt.com and click on Warranty Finder in the lower left-hand corner. Enter your 6-digit serial number, and it will tell you everything you need to know. Out of warranty? Click on Repair Department. But here's a tip. Before sending it in, pick up a $25 discount by going to Specials and Sales under the Buy Now tab at www.schonstedt.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Quick Stakes is your answer to staking. Lightweight, easy to ride on, easy to use, easy to find, and won't break your back carrying them like the old-fashioned wooden stakes. Have you tried a sample? If not, get a pen and paper and write down this number, 800-438-0387, or go to quickstake.com, that's QUIKSTAKE.com, and order your samples. Ask your surveying supply dealer for Quickstakes today.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Dave and I were talking about the articling system in Canada and how it works. And I was during the break, I was interested in what you were saying about how dealing with different levels of students all at the same time in that system. And that's not totally foreign to the way we work here. I was going to say during the break, I've been fortunate to have a number of people who've been able to get a license having worked with me. And although it's not a specific articling program the way you have it worked out, the learning process is still the same. People are at different levels all the time, and that is an interesting environment to be in, and very rewarding once your students reach their goal. I'm sure you experienced that as well.
I've articled all five Lance Beers Commission, and it makes me very proud to see that they have they've picked up the flag and they're walking with it. They've the maturity that some of these students have shown, and some of the initiative, and as well as they're younger, much younger than I am, so they've come to embrace the technology probably a lot better than I have ever done, but. I'm still working to catch up with some of them in that regard sometimes, but
well, all of us of a certain age.
It's a pleasure to see.
Yeah, we all feel that way. Yeah, I would agree with that. Now, one other quick question before we move to the next topic we will talk about. If someone goes through the articling process, receives a commission in Alberta, and then they decided they wanted to do the same thing in British Columbia, do they go through that entire articling process again, or is there some of the work they did in Alberta applicable to going someplace else?
We have it's almost like a free trade agreement, but it's the it's an agreement between the provinces where people with a professional commission in Alberta can work in a very, very shortened scenario to obtain their commission in either British Columbia or Saskatchewan. I would imagine you might have a similar process for a particular state surveyor to go get his once he's got his commission in one state to go get his commission in a neighboring state, and that would make sense. If their work area is kind of borders between two states. So yeah, there is an easier way to do that.
Yeah, the way it works for us is if an individual has met the educational requirements for a particular state, and of course we have varying educational requirements. Some states absolutely require a four-year degree, some don't. Some can go the technical school route, and then in some states you can go experience-only route, which is a longer journey, of course. And so the way
right.
It typically works here now is if, as a Virginia surveyor, I wanted to go someplace else to seek a license. In today's environment, I would have to have met the educational requirements in that state at the time I was licensed, and then I would go take a shorter state-specific exam, is what it's called, to get a license in another state. But if I didn't have the educational requirements that were in place when I received mine, then I couldn't go there at all.
Yeah, very similar process up here now. Yeah, very similar.
Well, our discussion that we've been having has been very, very interesting to me, but there's another topic I want to cover, and here we are at our last section, and it's a very interesting one and important one in people of mindset. Everybody who knows me knows I'm a minister's kid. But the work that you do with the engineering ministries, as do so many other surveyors, I know many surveyors here in the United States, either with that group or other groups, do a lot of outreach. And I'd like to have you talk about that, if you could.
Well, it's kind of a passion of mine, Kurt. Years ago, I was just kind of looking for a way to use my talents and skills as a land surveyor to help the betterment of native situations and places around the world. And I thought about looked at Engineers Without Borders, but it didn't seem to have a specific. It was more from an engineering perspective, and it didn't really cover much in the way of surveying. And it was through my involvement with volunteering and various church associations, doing some survey work for some local churches around here, that I was I received a call from Engineering Ministries International, which is an organization based out of Colorado Springs. But we have offices in Canada and several locations around the world. And I received a call from them to go on a project in Trinidad. And I had no idea who they were. And when I looked on their website, I thought, oh, maybe this is the kind of group I'd love to be involved with. So it was kind of a short notice thing, and we were surveying in the jungles of northern Trinidad, and I swear it's probably the hardest work I've ever done in all my career. I've never actually worked in such hot temperatures. We're well over 100 degrees and 100% humidity, and I think I only went to the bathroom maybe four times in 10 days. Everything else came out of your skin in the terms of sweat.
Yeah.
It was hard, and we were surveying a plot for a Bible camp for boys and girls, and that was the first project I was on. And I've been into Haiti a couple times, working for orphanages and medical clinics, and we've been into Rwanda. Rwanda is one of my favorite places on earth, despite the issues that they had there, in 1994. It's an incredible country with incredible potential, and Kenya, Uganda, and recently I just got back from a trip in Guatemala. So essentially what EMI is that they work with indigenous local ministries, and they provide their services for the cost of putting up with a team of engineers, architects, and land surveyors to come out to their country, to their ministry, to design schools, orphanages, medical clinics, even multi-use kind of like communal villages, which would incorporate pretty much all of those things. And so it's an incredible organization, and it's, like I said, it's got its roots in Colorado Springs. Bob Smith, who I know you've interviewed, and John Holt, I think those are guys that their names are sound pretty familiar, and wonderful guys to be associated with. And I would encourage any surveyor that's listening, if you ever have a desire to use your talents for the betterment of mankind, give these guys a look. It's something that I'm going to be involved in till they bury me 6 feet under, I'm sure, and I'll probably still want to go on the next trip wherever that would be. But it's just an incredible organization, and you get to experience not only the simple surveying that you do for a lot of these projects, essentially a topo survey. If you want to get into the issue with boundaries, you have to get the expertise of a local land surveyor in most cases, and that just makes sense. But as a topographical surveyor, you basically pick up all the information that the architects and engineers would use to figure out drainage, to figure out grades, to figure out various different elevations and how we're going to make these buildings work. Because the problem in working in developing in third world countries is that there's a certain principle, wastewater must go down. And a lot of times You know, that's one of the problems that they have, is a lot of their sites, a lot of their villages have never ever been designed properly. And, you know, there's contamination and disease and all that sort of stuff everywhere. But so that's kind of what we do as a group. And these mission trips are short-term mission trips, anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks. So you're involved in that. You basically, the surveyors kind of hit the ground running wherever they, you know, wherever they go, whether it be in Africa or South America or someplace like that, because basically they want to get all the topo information picked up so the engineers and architects can, you know, work their little miracles and make this project a success. And
so
that's essentially what we do.
Once the survey work is completed, do the engineers and architects do whatever design work they're going to do there on site, or do they go there and visit and get an idea of the lay of the land, so to speak, and then come back and do their design?
Well, they're there with us, so they have to do, they're looking at all the architectural designs to, you know, kind of make this, whatever it is that we're doing there fit. And they'll come up with a proposal at the end of two weeks or 3 weeks or whatever their time is. We'll come up with a proposal to the ministry and say, here, you know, here's what we think we should, you know, we'll work best. We think it would work best for you. The plans won't be finalized in that time. Sometimes it takes, you know, a couple months or 6 months, sometimes even a year, depending on the size of the project, to actually get those plans finalized. They're usually done back home.
Right.
And
so
these people are that they're involved in these projects, all do this. It's all on their volunteer time.
Sure. And that makes sense. Everybody's there gathering information to, as you said, make a proposal, if not really the right word, but lay out a scenario on how they might accomplish what they want to do. I understand all that. Do you find that local surveyors are available most places?
Not usually, at least not to volunteer. I mean, they would do their work for money, which makes sense. You know, we've had a couple of cases where we've had to have a boundary retraced and employ the local surveyor to come out and do that.
I would agree with you that it's certainly a worthwhile endeavor, and I have communicated and met Bob and John both over time, and they've actually come to our conferences. We stopped doing conferences for a while, so I haven't seen them for a few years, but they come to our conferences and have a booth and do recruiting there. Really, really good people. And we were in our last minute, so I want to make sure that I spend enough time thanking you for joining me today. It's been very enlightening and very, very interesting to hear what you've had to say about the way things work in Alberta and in Canada in general, and I definitely wanted to get information about the engineering ministries, because I think that and organizations like them are really, really important. So thank you so much for sharing all that with me. It's been great to have you.
Kurt, it's been an absolute pleasure. And, you know, if for whatever reason, if there's colleagues out there that do wish to contact me, you have my email address, you have my contact information, whether it be on boundary panel issues or EMI, that'd be great.
Sounds great. Well, thanks so much for being with me today, David. I appreciate it and hope to talk to you soon.
God bless.
This is America's Web Radio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.